Technology.ie, it's Wednesday, August 6th, 2014.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Not in the Black Knight studio today. We're in Michaela Nealon's office. My name is Conor Muinichon. This is Michaela Nealon. Hi, Michaela.
Hi, Conor. How's it going?
I'm good, and yourself?
Well, you know, surviving the Irish summer with all that glorious sun that we're not having anymore.
I think it's pretty good. A lot of people are happy with it. But I saw you post on Twitter or Facebook or something the other evening, a comparison of the current weather in Ireland and where you're heading on your holidays.
Yeah, there's a bit of a contrast between the temperatures over here and the temperatures in Los Angeles. Like Los Angeles on Saturday evening, Irish time, which would have been the middle of the day, Los Angeles time, was about 30 degrees and quote-unquote mostly sunny, whereas Carlo was 12 degrees and pouring rain. And of course, if it's raining, then you're probably going to have other stuff with that, which is going to make it feel even colder. Yeah, I know. I mean, we had a couple of weeks of pretty nice weather, but it's kind of weird at the moment when you're getting a nice start to the day and then it suddenly changes. I mean, I'm looking out now, it looks okay, but you know, that it could change again in 10 minutes.
Enough of that, says you.
Enough of that. Who cares?
Right. Fair enough. Okay, so there's a difference also between US law and Irish law, which is something we plan to talk about in this week's podcast.
Yeah, well, it's not just a matter of a difference between US law and Irish law. This is more down to national boundaries and, you know, where things should stop. And, you know, the thing with the internet is it's international, it crosses boundaries. You or I, we can go online, we can interact with people on the other side of the globe, we can buy things from people, we can sell things to people. But when it comes to legislation, law, what's happening in terms of, you know, which law governs what? That's where it starts getting very, very interesting.
What we're talking about here is the story in relation to the data which is on Microsoft servers in Ireland.
Yeah.
Can you fill me in on the background of this? This is data. Is this email data or something?
It's in relation to
a court case that's going on in the United States.
Okay, Microsoft runs a bunch of different services. So Live, MSN, Hotmail, Outlook.com, Office 365, Azure. There's a lot of these different services. And of course, there's also things like the Xbox stuff and everything. There's a lot of these online services hooked into these things. And they've got, so they'd have users in from around the globe. And a certain amount of that data will end up on Microsoft servers, which are physically in Ireland, probably in Dublin somewhere.
So this came up in a court case in the United States that they wanted
access to a particular user's email. So they served, so a US court, which has jurisdiction in the US, served something on Microsoft, the US corporation, demanding access to data on Irish servers. Now, the interesting thing here is that Microsoft pushed back. Now, let's call a spade a spade. Microsoft doesn't always push back. And Microsoft and a lot of the other big companies, they have revealed some of the stuff that they've done in the past in terms of stuff that they've done involving court cases, involving law enforcement, involving government and everything else, but not all of that has been revealed and probably ever will be revealed. So, you know, they're kind of looking at Microsoft like, oh, aren't they wonderful? they're so good. Be careful about that, because it's not the entire picture.
Neither is it the case that there isn't a valid case to be made by law enforcement agencies in different jurisdictions.
But this isn't a law enforcement issue this time, as far as I'm aware.
Isn't it?
As far as I'm aware, no. This is down to a court order. This right. has nothing to do. This is not a matter of, say, the FBI trying to get access to data on a server. That would be a different thing entirely, because they have there's all these different agreements between different law enforcement agencies and between different governments, which allows for that kind of thing to happen. So, let's say FBI wants access to data. Essentially, Ungartha Síochána would present the request to Microsoft Ireland, essentially.
And it would probably have to go through an Irish court?
Not necessarily, no.
Okay.
No, not necessarily. I mean, it depends on what it is, etc. Okay. But, you know, we're talking about a valid law enforcement request. The thing here is this is down to this, what this thing, this particular court case involving Microsoft, it's all about, you know, a US corporation which may or may not have an Irish or other European subsidiary, which is could be, legally speaking, a separate corporate entity, but it's still owned by the American parent.
Right.
So the American parent is subject to US law. And it's probably in the American parent's best interests to play nice under US law, because otherwise that could get messy. But the problem, of course, is that if you look at any of the big online cloud-based services, the Amazons, the Microsofts, and others, they all share a common thread. None of them are European. They may have servers in Europe, but they're not European. And of course, the other side to this is true as well. If we, Black Knight, were to have a cloud of some kind or other services using servers in the US, we couldn't protect ourselves using Irish law. Because if the servers are physically in the United States, they're governed by US law. It's an interesting court case, and it's interesting that Microsoft is fighting it. What's going to happen in the long run, I don't know.
But is it the case, or did I misinterpret this, that is it the case that there is a valid path which the US court could take here in relation to treaties between Ireland and the US in order to get that data, but that it's simply choosing to say take the shortcut and order the parent company in the US to handle
it?
I'm not okay.
I mean, first off, you know, I I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah.
Longer answer, yeah. You know, there are ways for a US court to legally and properly do things across boundaries.
Yeah.
It's just longer because it's more complicated, and possibly it probably is more expensive. But, you know, the thing with a lot of these things is that, you know, the Irish government hasn't really dealt with any of these things properly. I mean, they don't turn up. There's a dialogue. You know, there's a lot of this stuff that goes on. The Internet Infrastructure Coalition, I'm on the board of that, as you know. This court case is something that we're all watching very, very closely. So, you know, you've got some of the big US providers, and they're kind of going, okay, you know, what are we going to do here? Because, you know, depending on how this pans out, this is going to have a tangible impact on these guys' bottom line.
They're already talking about that. We already hear about that. Big corporations in the States are saying, yes, we can point to business that we are losing because of an insecure regime, if you like, in relation to data security and privacy in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, there was Christian Dawson, who we've spoken to in the past. Christian, myself, and a few others, we spoke to Bloomberg, I think it was last week, about this. Christian got quoted, I didn't, but okay. Pretty sad. But, you know, Christian states that his company, Servant, has lost, I can't remember what the percentage is, but he's lost a certain percentage of business as a result of the Snowden revelations and everything else, you know, NSA, government snooping, etc., etc. Now, we like to say that under European law and the European kind of regime and way of handling things, that we're probably better, quote unquote. But then you have the big story from last week where Paddy Power turned around and go, oopsie daisy, we screwed up. Oh, and by the way, It wasn't last week or the week before. It was how what whenever it was,
frankly. 6 years ago, was it?
Four or five years ago. Yeah, I mean, you know, this is like a bit of a, it's more than a kind of a whoopsie daisy moment. It's like, wow.
Let's talk about that. So what happened was that there was a breach, which they were aware of at the time. And what they're saying is that they investigated it. Paddy Power investigated it at the time. And as far as they could determine at the time, they decided that there were 600,000 or so accounts breached, but that the only thing that was breached was there was no financial information involved, and there was no security information, or so they determined. But it turns out that there was more than that actually involved, and they only discovered that recently when it turned out that data belonging to Paddy Power subscribers from yes, it was 2010, wasn't it?
Yeah.
From 2010 and previous was actually being traded apparently in Canada, or being offered to people in Canada, and it turned out that they were saying that not only it was in fact all it was a considerable amount of personal data, your full name and address, your phone number, your email address. This is all the kind of information I get asked for when I phone my bank to confirm that it's me. And not only that, the security question, which may well be, for example, mother's maiden name or whatever, may well be the same security question that you're using on other services.
And this, I mean, this is one of the problems with, I mean, okay, let's, you know, at least Paddy Power fessed up. They sent an email to everybody. It's, you know, look, we could spend a lot of time beating up on them, but look, they're going to have enough on their plate dealing with it. But the thing you raised there about, you know, the shared concept of the shared data, the shared question-answer type thing, this is a huge problem, because a lot of the time you forget. Yeah. You know, you don't think, you're not going to join the two up. Now, for example, I did a piece there at the weekend with the Sunday Times about the Fitbits. Well, Fitbit in my case, because that's the one I use. In other words, the tracker tracks my movement or lack of my movement. And, you know, Symantec had come out with a report there last week or whatever, saying that there were security issues with it. Now, personally, I couldn't give a damn about that for a variety of different reasons. Yeah. I mean, if you want me to talk, but I can, not a problem. But it's just, you know, I share a lot of information anyway, or other parts of it, I really don't care if people know or not, because it's not, like, you know, you want to know how much I weigh? Fine. Mm. I'm not going to tweet my weight, but if you find out how much I weigh, fine. I don't care. It's like, it's not, you know, it's, I don't know, it's not like some kind of sexually transmitted disease or anything. So, I mean, who cares? But what was interesting, I thought, was the aspect where they were talking about how a lot of these trackers could send usernames and passwords in the plane, in other words, not encrypted. And, of course, these passwords could be used elsewhere. Now, that was the thing that kind of piqued my curiosity a little bit when I saw the piece come out after I'd spoken to the journal about it. Because that is something that we run into all the time. I mean, you go onto any wireless network, you know, in a hotel or something like that, where the wireless might not be encrypted. And there's tools you can run on your laptop, even if you are using Windows, you poor thing. I'm meeting Microsoft tomorrow. You've heard of Wireshark and the other tools like that, and there's lots of other ones out that you can get your hands on, which will basically sniff the packets of data flying around on a network by putting your network interface into promiscuous mode. I always think it's hilarious when they say promiscuous mode. I mean, like an Ethernet adapter has a sex life. Okay. Anyway, so you can capture what's going on. And if you actually look at it, it's fascinating. You can see things like usernames, passwords, all sorts of other things flying around, because a lot of these services, people use them in an unencrypted fashion. Mm. So instead of using the secure SSL encrypted connection, they're using a plain text one, and they're sending the data across. Mm. But the thing is, you know, a lot of people don't really care. They don't think about things. I mean, people say, oh, you know, XYZ should be, you know, more secure, should be better. But if you say, okay, you know, here's a way of making this more secure, they don't like it. Mm. So I don't know. I don't know if it's
we interviewed Brian Honan, the security expert, last week in relation to the Paddy Power story, and one of the things he took out of it really, and one of the key recommendations he gave, is that people should use a password manager. Would you agree with that?
To use one or not to use one?
To use one.
Oh, totally. I mean, James actually did a post on the blog there about password managers a couple of weeks back. Mm. I use LastPass, both the web version and the mobile version, and have done so for the last probably 2 years, maybe longer. And it helps me because it does a couple of things. One, for sites and services which require very, very complex passwords, it can remember them for me, so I don't have to have bits of paper written all over the place. The other thing as well is, it can help to generate really stupidly secure passwords for you. And because it's, you know, you say, right, okay, you know, over X, between X length and Y length, mm-hmm. you know, and you can give it all sorts of other things, other parameters. I mean,
even, it saves a lot of time when it comes to changing a password, for example.
Oh, God, yeah, because this is the other thing as well. It's like a lot of systems, more secure systems, won't allow you to use a password that you've used in the previous, I don't know how many days or weeks or months.
Yeah, yeah.
So it becomes more a problem. Now, a password manager, I think, is a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
But it's the main thing, of course, is, you know, most of them will need some kind of password on them. So for the love of God, set a decent, strong password on that and keep the damn thing up to date, and don't have it written down on a scrap of paper stuck to your monitor, because that kind of defeats the entire object of having a secure password in the first place.
Absolutely does. You broke some news last week, Michele, in relation to ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. They have 3 public meetings in different spots in the globe every year. And the third one in 2015 is going to be in Dublin.
Yes, this I think is a big one for Ireland. The last ICANN meeting, which was the one in London towards the end of June, in other words, about a month and a half or so ago, was the biggest public meeting to date. There were, I think, over 3,000 people officially registered for the meeting. Traditionally, from what I've seen anyway, and I think it's something that a lot of others would agree with, the European meetings tend to be bigger because a lot of people like coming to Europe. Plus, there's 28 member states in the European Union. So, you know, you're going to get people from a variety of European countries descending on whichever location it is. And because it's Europe, you find that people bring their families. So a lot of the registrars, registries and people like that, they'll turn up. It'll be, you know, John Doe plus girlfriend or wife plus kids. There's people will peg on like a short holiday before or after the meeting. And the feedback I've had from people when they heard it was Dublin, they were delighted. They thought, oh, it's excellent, because a lot of the people like Dublin. Others had never been to Ireland and really are really looking forward to it. So, I mean,
it's an opportunity as well, because not only is Ireland a great tourist destination, a great conference destination, and all of that as well, and Dublin is a great centre to hold a conference or an event like that in, but Ireland is also it's a significant location when it comes to the international domains industry, for example. Isn't that the case?
Yeah, I mean, I did a quick post out there the other day. When the cat got out of the bag, because obviously I knew about it, I knew that Dublin had been chosen, but I was sworn to secrecy. Affilius are based in the IFSC. Affilius run .info, .mobi. They also run the back-end services for a load of domain extensions, including .me. They're going to be launching a couple of really cool domain extensions over the next couple of months, including .organic, which I think is one we're interested in. Obviously, IDR are based in Dublin. I mean, that's a bit of a no-brainer. IDR run .ie. Rightside Registry, which is part of Rightside. Rightside is the domains bit that spun off from Demand Media. I think officially that happened like last week or so. But a lot of their technical staff that runs the actual registry backend for the right side TLDs and the donut stuff, they're based in the centre of Dublin. Starting DOS are a new TLD applicant. They've got a couple of strings. I think Arshi is one, and there's a couple of others. I think that's the one of the applicants for Dotski. Maybe they actually got Dotski. Minds and Machines, who are running the back end for .London and have a bunch of applications of their own or in partnership with other companies. .Global, which was originally based out of Norway, have moved their stuff to Dublin as of a couple of weeks ago. TLD Registry, who have, with a name like that, you would think they were terribly Irish, but they're actually not. They're running a load of Chinese IDN stuff. All of those companies are all based in Dublin. It's actually kind of weird that there's only a single one of them based outside Dublin. I suppose that just shows how wonderful this FDI stuff is. You know, Dublin is the centre of the universe. But anyway, that's another conversation.
Excellent. And of course, we must give credit to the Ireland's Internet Neutral Exchange as well, INEX, which has are essentially hosting this. Yeah,
no, they are hosting it. I mean, they're the ones who will be who put the bid in. Right. They're the ones who won the bid, and they're the ones who will be organising all the stuff that the local host has to look after. I mean, hosting an ICANN meeting, the logistics and everything else are pretty complex. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at some of the statistics we published during the ICANN meeting in London, I mean, you know, the amount of bandwidth being used, the number of, you know, Wi-Fi nodes, all these kind of things. It's pretty impressive. But I mean, Dublin's already hosted IETF meetings and it's hosted Wright meetings. But both of those would have been quite a bit smaller than an ICANN meeting in terms of footfall, in terms of number of people. But, you know, ICANN is small comparatively to, say, the Web Summit.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, it's a different type of setup. I mean, the Web Summit, you're talking about, you know, the RDS, you're talking about, you know, a totally different kind of vibe, a totally different way of running things. So, you know, there's differences there. But, you know,
we'll be hearing more about it. No, it's only just recently been announced. Something else I wanted to talk about was the crackdown on blogging in Russia came into effect. I don't know if you had much of a chance to see this. Came into effect, this law, I think, was passed a couple of months ago and took effect from the 1st of August. If you are a blogger in Russia, Michele, and you have more than 3,000 visitors per day or readers per day to your site, you have to register.
This isn't the first. They're not the first country to do that. Poland introduced something similar a couple of years ago, from what I recall, and a couple of other countries have been looking at this type of thing. I mean, you know, registering is one thing. I mean, you know, you're registering or declaring that you are something. Mm. In some respects, that's not abhorrent.
Mm.
But of course, in the case of Russia, it probably is quite apparent because they probably want to do something nasty at the same time. It's probably not, it's probably not a good thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, the idea that somebody might, you know, register somewhere, that's a bad idea. No, because if you look at under the U.S. legislation, they introduced something there a couple of years ago where if you you know, reviewed a product or anything like that, or if you took advertising, you had to be upfront about it. Mm. It was just basically to cover some areas around disclosure, because a lot of people just weren't. They weren't disclosing how they were getting money, how they were monetizing things. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in terms of Russia and the internets in general. I mean, they're also talking about outlawing Russian companies from doing anything outside Russia, that all social networks in Russia have to be hosted in Russia.
Mm.
You know, there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on, but they're not the only country that's doing these kind of things. Now, whether that will all come to pass or not, who knows?
Briefly, I blogged there. Also, we interviewed, as I say, Brian Honan last week. I also interviewed Áine Kerr, who's managing editor of Storyful. And they had an interesting story last week, Michael. I don't know if you got a chance to see it. But what they do is they find and they verify stories that originate on social media. Videos, viral videos, is one aspect of it. They provide that service to to news organisations, and allow them to be able to feature content with confidence. But equally, they're also making sure that the owners and originators of that content actually get credit and get compensation in cases where they want it. I interviewed Áine Kerr. She was saying to me that in 80% of cases, people who put content on the internet, they don't want money for it. They're interested in getting coverage for the issue or the cause or whatever it may be. But in some cases, and especially when it comes to the viral videos, to the cute little baby who didn't want her brother to grow up and all of this kind of thing, people are actually, you know, making quite a bit of money off of that. Speaking to Áine, she said, you know, it's nice to be able to help people from that point of view, because for the vast majority of these people, they'll never have another viral hit in their lifetime. So it's usually a one-hit wonder. It's a nice thing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is this. I mean, like, you know, it's like I've watched a few things there over the last couple of days. There was some story, I think it was yesterday, where a plane ended up being escorted into land by the US Air Force. I mean, obviously in the States somewhere. And a couple of the passengers had managed to take photographs out the window of the US Air Force jets and tweeted them, because, you know, a lot of US domestic flights have Wi-Fi. And it was interesting to see some of the media outlets tweeting these users, asking them for permission to use the photos. But and that's good, and I that's great. But there's still a lot of people who, you know, they'll just grab these photos or other content, be that videos, photos, could be anything, and just shove it up online. I mean, we could spend hours discussing DMCA, but I mean, I sent a DMCA to Google in relation to some content of mine that some little tow rag is using. And it's like, you know, if he was being upfront about it and actually, or asked my permission, then it'd be one thing. But what this little tow rag is doing is he's going off, he's grabbing the content, he's manipulating it slightly so that it's kind of basically, it's an automated thing. This is the software that you can use to do that. That is tweaking it slightly. And then, you know, it's just, you know, it's spammy content and everything else. But I mean, obviously this guy is going to make money from it. Sorry. Just my emails abuse me.
All right.
Anyway, I think, you know, I think it's good that, you know, you can make money from content. And I mean, I look at some of the things and I think about it. It's like, okay, you know, if I spend time, energy and effort, or you or anybody, creating content, it could be to raise awareness of a cause, which is great. It could be for any number of different reasons. But, you know, you obviously want that payback. Because otherwise, why would you bother spending time, energy, and effort doing it?
Absolutely.
So I think, you know, it's interesting, and if there's if companies can help people to do that, well, great.
Finally, Michaela, I wanted to just very briefly ask you about new generic top level domains in Ireland. Black Knight have been selling them and offering them and adding new ones almost weekly, really, over the last 5 or 6 weeks at least. How's that going? What is the interest among Irish people in new generic TLDs?
Well, I mean, I think let's break that up a little. First off, what have we been doing? We're playing catch up at the moment, to be perfectly frank. I mean, there's no point saying anything else. There's a lot of new TLDs that are out there already. They're alive. That some of our competitors, you know, non-Irish companies, are already offering. So we obviously want to get those out there as quickly as we can. We've been working on integrating with a lot of these new registries and new registry platforms. So we're adding stuff. We put live 3 TLDs today. We put live .bid, .trade, and .webcam. Those are three TLDs from a company called Famous Four Media, who are based in Gibraltar. There's other ones that we've started work on, because they mightn't be ready to launch for a while yet. But we want to do is I want to get it to a point where, you know, somebody goes to our website. There's going to be a bit of information about that new TLD. When we start offering it, it's not like, oh my god, what's happening? You know, it should be something that's prepared and everything else. In terms of uptake and interest to date, the uptake has been low. I mean, the figures on this are public, so I can't lie and pretend that they're much higher than they actually are. But I think, you know, this will change over time. I think, you know, as awareness grows, people will start registering these funky domains. I mean, the thing is this, like, we've been doing a little bit around this. Now, I'm not going to... for us at the moment, in terms of size, as in volume of registrations, the overall volume is still very, very low. Mm. We won't quote those numbers, but, you know. Mm. Like, the biggest TLD for us so far has been .wiki,
okay,
followed by .club. Now, both of those are simple, straightforward. They don't really need a massive amount of explanation. I mean, you either know what a wiki is or you don't. But if you do, it could resonate with you. Club has so many meanings. I think this is one that...
it's going to be popular.
It's going to be popular. Yeah. But it's already doing very, very well globally. For us, it's proven within a couple of weeks of us putting it live, it's already become the second biggest new TLD for us. The third biggest one for us so far is .inc.
Mm.
And then, but, you know, there's a couple of other new TLDs we're offering. There's been no take-up yet. Mm.
But it's a question, in a way, of educating the public as to what their options are, what the availability is here. And you've got a slogan in relation to this. You're saying, think different, think context, think available.
Yeah, and I mean, we were discussing this earlier, but in relation to something else that we're working on. And I think that's the thing, is that, first off, think different. You know, think out of the box.
Mm.
Stop thinking about the traditional, the safe,
the .com or the .net or .ie.
Yeah, exactly. Because let's face it, if you think like that, I mean, sure, you might do well, but
your options. But people need to realise that their options are actually much broader than
Much broader than that. It's like you go into a restaurant. You know, do you want to have like the steak and the steak, potatoes and veg, or do you want to try something funky and different that could turn out to be absolutely amazing? Now, sure, it might turn out you won't like it, but you won't know until you try.
Mm.
So, you know, I think that's, you know, think different. Think context. That's a bit of a no-brainer.
Mm. Because that's what these new TLDs are about, really. They're, you know, each one is applicable to a specific context,
exactly,
or a range, perhaps a limited number of
exactly. Context. So the idea being that, let's say, okay, you own a bar.
Mm.
You can register a .bar domain. Now, and of course, you could register a .dot, a .com or a .ie or a .co or a .biz or whatever. But if you have a bar, .bar.
You already have, in the TLD itself, you already have more information about what your type of business is.
I mean, there's other ones which are more kind of fun. I mean, I like .buzz. I like that. I think that, you know, you could do stuff and things around that. Mm. You know, the buzz around anything. I mean, there's so many things. Like, I registered one, which I'm not going to say what it is, specifically for sharing content in relation to the ICANN meeting next year in Dublin.
Okay.
Just as a kind of... It's just something around that. I mean, just because... I just told myself, you know, damn it, you know, that would actually be an interesting way to use the domain. And there's other ones out there, and they're, you know, they speak to specific industries, speak to specific contexts, and I think that's where there's a strength. And then the third point we're looking at is the availability aspect.
Mm.
Like, the number of times I've seen people and businesses kind of going, oh, you know,
the domain I wanted isn't there.
The domain I wanted isn't there. Got I'm restricted in my choices. I can't do this, I can't do that, because it's not available. Mm. But whereas with a new TLD, you can do things like registering your first name dot extension. Mm. You could, and it doesn't matter how common your first name is. Mm. You might be able to find an domain extension that you can get that in. And I think that's, you know, I like that idea. I like the idea of, like, you know, your personal space. Mm. As one thing. Or maybe you can go for, like, some kind of super duper, super relevant term that speaks to an industry or something. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of options there. The fact that the domain names are available at registration price is attractive. Now, speaking of price, the thing that people need to be aware of is most of the new TLDs are going to cost you more than your .com. Mm. And if you don't like that, well, tough. You know, the thing with .com is, I think, the price around that, it was, first off, when .com was first originally introduced, they were free. Mm. This is going back, you know, 20 plus years ago. Then when things kind of, they started charging for them, they were probably a little bit too expensive. Mm. But then things went the other way. It went too far the other way. So that you have this kind of thing where a lot of business people and businesses are used to seeing .com domain names as being, you know, a couple of euro a pop. Mm. And while that's not a bad thing, I mean, the thing is, though, that you're potentially building your entire business around this domain name. So why on earth wouldn't you be willing to spend a little bit of money on it? I mean, you think about it, Con. Like, you look at, say, your mobile phone, right? Average mobile phone, you're going to spend anything from, like, 50 to 100 or 100 euro on a mobile phone, possibly more. You might get offers and discounts and everything else, but, like, you know, if you're a bit of a gadget geek, you're going to change your mobile phone probably about once a year. Mm. It's not, a mobile phone is not for life at all. I mean, it's not. Puppies are for life. That's a different thing. Puppies aren't just for Christmas. You know, and you look at, say, how much you might spend with your mobile phone provider per month. Mm. I mean, I don't know how much you're spending, but I think, you know, from what I've heard, the kind of average thing is probably 20, 30 euro a month or something, easily. Mm. And yet people won't spend more than like 10 or 15 euro a year on a domain name? But they want to run their entire business off? I'm sorry, huh? I'm confused.
Okay, Michaela, I'm going to go and see if con.buzz is available, and thanks for talking to us.
No problem, Con. Talk to you again.